Hello, welcome back to Badass Fest 2022. The hits keep coming. This is the second installment. We're going to be talking, as is traditional, about Sylvester Stallone and his movie Over the Top, which combines the thrills of a child custody case with the chills of an arm wrestling championship.
Yeah.
Of course, this is a whole series in our our badass summer celebration. We'll be doing a Wednesday, working Wednesday stream, talking about our badass list that we're maintaining. We're going to be updating our existing rule set because we had some controversies last year. Our controversial character with a gun on the cover. There's going to be like an asterisk in the Badass Hall of Fame for everyone inducted under that bogus rule. Mm-hmm. We're going to be retooling some stuff kind of looking over a badass list if you want to join us there. And also, Jeff Bezos willing, and if it's still available, we'll be doing an over-the-top watch party for Theatrical Thursdays this Thursday. And I don't think you want to miss it. I think it's going to be a really good time. We're going to be watching it live. If you have an Amazon Prime account, you're ready to go. You just need a free Twitch account. Join those things together. It takes 30 seconds. There's information on our twitch.tv/baldmove site. If you go to the about section on how to do it, easy peasy. Anyway, this movie, Over the Top, is directed by Menahem Golan, who seems to be an expert at getting genre schlock onto the screen with a minimum of budget. He directed Masters of the Universe, which is going to be interesting because it's going to come up perhaps later in the Badass series this year, and Superman IV, The Quest for Peace. You kind of getting a picture of his oeuvre. A screenplay written by Sterling Siliphant, who sounds like a Harry Potter villain, but in reality sure. Worked for over 70 primetime series, including Perry Mason. He also wrote The Towering Inferno and The Poseidon Adventure, the former of which he received got an Oscar for Best Picture. Is also co-written by Sylvester Stallone, although you could debate, how much of what was there and who insisted on what. Certainly, we'll probably get into that. It stars Sylvester Stallone, also Robert Loggia. Is that how you do it, Loggia? Right?
I call him Loggia, but. It's probably Loggia? Not right. There's probably an
I. It's probably... No, Loggia sounds right. Ah, fuck. Robert Loggia, you've probably seen him in Pink Panther, Officer, Gentleman, Scar... an Officer, a Gentleman, and a Scarface. He plays the hard ass.
Yeah.
Whether he's a military hard ass, he's a mafioso hard ass, he's what? He's just always playing a hard ass. Susan Blakely... who the only film credit I recognized is The Towering Inferno. She has she's got a thankless task and a thankless role in this movie. Mm-hmm. And David Mendenhall, who has Space Raiders to his credit and also voiceover work for a ton of cartoons in the 80s, probably the one most prominent. His turn is Daniel Witwicky, the constant companion of Bumblebee and the Autobots in the Transformers series. This movie is also star-studded with real-life world wrestling, arm wrestling champions. Scott Norton, Alan Fisher, John Vreeland, Cleve Dean, Andrew the Cobra Rhodes, John Bzerk. If you're an arm wrestling aficionado, you probably, especially from the 80s, you probably recognize some of those names. Jim.
Yeah.
What do you think of this here badass movie, Over the Top? Is it even a badass movie?
That's a damn good question. You know what? You take at least one of those words out and I will agree with it. It's certainly a bad movie. It's a very bad movie. It's an ass movie too. Yeah. Either one you could take out. I didn't realize how bad this movie is. I remember watching this movie and thinking, damn, that was a fun time, but there's a lot of this movie that is not fun, and tonally this is just a garbage fire, man. This thing is all over the map tonally. I don't know what they were trying to make here, but they failed no matter what they were trying.
That's what I kind of, that's what makes me love it, that this is just it seems like no one wanted to make this film, not really. Sly did it because they offered him $12 million, and he got the rights to write it and have the final say on the script and the final cut of the film. They hire this kind of director who will just essentially point a camera at anything you give him money for. A scriptwriter of, you know, a decent amount of talent who also says they butchered his movie. When he saw it, he said he actually wept at what they'd done to it. I don't know, but I think that's what makes it kind of amazing, because it's like Sly in 70% of these scenes looks like he's on some kind of benzo.
Yeah, yeah. He's got zero charisma with this kid, as best I can tell.
Yeah, like, and because it's like it's the exact same approach that he takes to women that we've talked about in other Sly movies, where it's like this constant fucking like shit you'd say in the outfield at a batter. Hey, batter, batter. Hey, batter. Hey, woman, woman. Hey, well, woman. Hey.
But it's dialed down to like a three. It's
that's what I'm saying.
There, yeah.
If you take like his bonding with the son is the exact same energy, just completely turned down to an ebb. So it's just hey, better, better, hey,
and,
no,
and I can't
Mike,
tell,
better, Mike, you know,
it is. Are you finished with your slide? For yes. You'll have plenty of time later for that.
I know, I know.
I can't tell if that is Stallone trying to act like the sheepish father who has abandoned his son and is now coming back to try and get into his life, or if that is Stallone having zero chemistry with kids, because I don't know, aside from a Rocky movie where he interacts with his child for like half a second in each of those films, right? I don't think I've ever seen him like truly interact with a child other than this movie.
Well, and also think about like any interaction he has with someone that's not like adversarial. It's this clown persona where he just comes, hey, you know, random props. Hey, we're doing a stupid thing, you know.
And that's fine. It works so well in Rocky, right? Like when he's trying to charm Adrian, there's an energy. There's a movement to those scenes. And it comes from Rocky, right? And who he is. This movie, he's doing roughly the same thing. But like you said, dial down the three and just... it does not work. And I don't know how this is possible, but this kid has more chemistry with him than he has with the kid. I don't know how it doesn't translate the other way, because I think the kid is actually really good and energetic and exciting. But like,
this is not a great role for a kid, I don't think, but he's game for it, man. He reminded me a lot of the kid from not Close Encounters.
Flight of the Navigator.
Yes, yeah. Yes. The same kind of like natural kid performance.
Yeah. But he's looking across the stage and he's just getting nothing back. Nothing.
Yeah. Dead eyes. Dead. Right. Dead heavy lidded eyes. Well, it's like also there's a lot of heavy lifting being done by this movie and script by studiously ignoring any judgment of actually what happened. What actually happened to make him leave his family and stay away for all these years? There's like hints and stuff like that, but like, it's kind of like, imagine how much different Rocky would be if Adrian had been his wife that he left when, you know, she was 19 years old and pregnant. Mm-hmm. And he then had a loser career as a boxer and he came in and now he's trying to woo her back. Like, we would feel a lot differently about that romance. Everything else is the same. Like, Rocky's still a loser. He's still got a nightmare apartment with like knives sticking out of the walls and AK-47s leaning up against the windows. But now we know it's like she's already taken a spin on this Loserville wagon, and we saw what happened. Well, I feel like that's at least a question hanging in the air of this movie, is like, why is this guy such a deadbeat dad? And like, they give kind of plausible smokescreen, but they never give us like an ultimate, like, you know what, actually Sly is a good guy and he's tried everything he could and he's just been thwarted on all fronts. A lot of points.
The kid asks him straight up, well, like, why did you leave us? And he doesn't give him a why, he gives him a what. He says, I made a mistake. That's a what.
Yeah,
that's a what, not a why. Tell me why. Yeah, you left.
There's lots of types of mistakes. You know, you can forget to pay your parking ticket, Stallone. Sure. You know, you can, you know, you can forget your mom's birthday and you can like just take off and leave your family for a decade.
Uh-huh.
There's some mistakes and there's some mistakes. And for a fact, like, it's like, the more I watch this movie, the more I'm kind of on Robert Loggia's side. Like, I'm not so sure the grandpa shouldn't have custody of this kid, especially some of the decisions he makes. God. Okay. But the thing is like, all these things aside, these are the things I cherish about this film. This is the stupidest film you could think of to make about one of the stupidest things that actually exists, which is arm wrestling competitions.
Sure. I'm not like saying big money stuff too.
I mean, and I'm like, if you're an arm wrestler and you're getting those checks, I'm not, it's cool, man. Like it's right. No more or less stupid than dudes throwing hoops through balls through hoops and dragging balls across lines. It's like, I don't know why society values that shit more than what you guys are doing, but it's all fucking silly. And this is the silliest version of a film, like this incredibly sensitive, you know, Kramer versus Kramer type of stuff. Within the rubric of essentially a professional wrestling level shtick thing.
Yeah. No, it was funny because I'm watching this movie with my wife last night, and I'm telling her, like, okay, this movie is great. It's hilarious. It has some good action in it. And the first, like, two-thirds of this movie is none of that, right? You get, like, an arm wrestling scene, like a single one, in the first hour of this movie. And like, the plot, like, kind of resolves itself in a weird way halfway through this movie, where like Stallone goes to jail and he's kind of like,
for his mini crimes,
sure, and he's strong-armed into like signing paperwork that gives over custody of Michael to Robert Loggia, and leaving the state and never coming back. And my wife's just like, well, that's the end of the movie, right? Like, he lost his kid because he's a shitty father. And I'm like, no, now the movie is going to go into the part of the movie that I actually like, which is the arm wrestling competition. I told her, no, now the movie starts. And like, the last half hour of this movie is what this entire movie should have been, roughly. They should have jettisoned all this sad sack bullshit about this kid and his dying mom. I mean, the shit at the beginning is so fucking heavy that, like, the lighthearted stuff they do to try and energize the film in the early going just completely wears off.
Dude,
it's overpowered by the weepy shit that they're doing with this kid and his horrible life. And then you get to a point in this movie where it just totally changes. And now everything is like action and fucking Eddie Money is singing into your ears, like, at his highest pitch with fucking ballads. And I'm like, it's crazy. The end of this movie is nothing like the start of this movie.
The Quiet Storm slow jam soundtrack of this is it's that's what I'm saying.
God awful. Yeah.
Everything was just bad choices, and that's what's so awesome about it, because it's like a child painting with like too bright a palette, and they're like, oh, we need to mix some darkness. Oh, but that's too dark. It's like it's just wildly swinging from one extreme to the next.
Yeah,
they've got this dead mother thing that's like not just an inciting event like Guardians of the Galaxy, where it's like, here's the heartbreak to set. It's something that just like, it's like, if the movie Bambi, every 15 to 20 minutes, they drug Bambi's mother out to shoot her again.
Right, right.
But that's I'm saying that's what I love. That I love every aspect of this movie and how obvious it is. Like, you know, Stallone getting ready to meet his son, and he's like spiffed up as spiffy as he can be, but everyone's conspicuously like pointing and laughing at him at the military academy and being like, oh, what's this fucking homeless bum doing here?
I mean, it's because, like, he looks straight off like a 1940s union poster. Like, that
no,
outfit?
I know, but
yeah.
But it's just really funny how the movie is just like making sure you hear every shitty and snide comment, and like, he would be this abject of derision or object of derision. It's like, I don't know. It's just, everything is just very, very broad. And I don't know, I like laugh my head off through the whole part, even early parts, like where there's like a 3-minute music montage of him and his son doing truck related exercises.
Oh my. Yeah, we got to talk about that.
There's like that. You can tell, like, they're just like, Jesus Christ, we have 30 minutes of because I don't know if you know the story about the way they filmed the professional wrestling contest. Uh-huh. But like,
yeah.
We got these 30 fire minutes of arm wrestling that people are going to want to see. Mm-hmm. Now we need like 4 or 5 set pieces to get us there. Go. And they just don't got answers, man.
No, their answers are all too, they're bummers. Every single one is a fucking bummer. And I hate it. That's the thing. I think conceptually this is amazing.
Your hearts turned dark. What happened? This is an eight. This is like what you went in here trying to take an 80s arm wrestling movie seriously. What's going on?
That's the problem. Is I didn't want to take it seriously, and this movie almost forces me to try, and that's the thing I don't like. Because like, look, conceptually I love it. I think it's hilarious that you would have this super heartfelt, sappy tragedy story in the middle, smack in the middle of the dumbest kind of competition I could think of. No offense to the people who do it, but like the act of sitting down and watching this movie,
coming from you, I gotta say, Jim,
fair. The act of sitting down and watching this movie is the thing that I don't enjoy. I like it conceptually. Actually engaging with it is another thing entirely.
I got to disagree with you, because like it's the other thing is it's 90 minutes. And again, I cherish all of the absurdity. It's like, that's the thing. It's like this movie's best enjoyed by you never letting yourself forget that it's about a custody battle by a man who has abandoned his child for 12 years and is showing up out of the blue because.
Yeah, there's a layer of absurdity there.
And the fact that like the movie gives you all these breadcrumbs of like this mystery of why, how did this happen? How did this happen? But it's like a shepherd's tone that just constantly but it will never get there. There is never any resolution to that. Just improbable. And when I say improbable, and when you see the final eight contestants of this thing, you'll know what I mean. This improbable victory that this guy has in this contest is the only thing that keeps this from essentially being Duquan's ending from The Wire season 4. He's just going, he's a homeless person with this aging bum who's just pushing a shopping cart and trying to collect scrap metal to put food in their belly and drugs in their veins. That, like, if he don't beat the fucking bull.
Yeah.
He's done. He's done.
Uh-huh. No, he's leveraged his entire life. He's at the end of his rope.
He's like, yeah, he's done.
Yeah. You remember that movie we watched with Paul Newman called The Verdict? Where it's kind of a story of him himself as a lawyer and a lover and everything. What if that movie ended just with like a killer banjo playing tournament or something? Like, that's the vibe that I get. Like, or a hopscotch tournament, like professional hopscotch is what I would like to see.
What's funny is like there is something cool about this movie.
Uh-huh.
There is about this idea, and several films since have unlocked a mystery. A much better version of this movie, if you just want the like awesome side of it, is Real Steel. With Hugh Jackman and boxing robots. A much better version of this from the emotional angle is Southpaw.
I was going to say a much better version of this movie is Rocky. Like, this movie is Rocky.
Well, I'm talking about it specifically with the child element. Who is down on his luck has to redeem this relationship with the child. And like show the actual hard work, because like we're a Southpaw where, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal actually has to suffer and have personal growth, like Sly Stallone literally it's a mistake his way through the entire interaction. And he doesn't become a better father. He becomes an improbably successful arm wrestler.
Yeah. And I said how dumb arm wrestling competitions are, right? And I want to contextualize this. So You and I are both big fans of the strongman competitions.
Sure. I love that
shit. You get Bjorn Bjornsson out there or whatever, lifting 400 kilogram boulders onto pedestals.
Yeah, throwing telephone poles.
Pulling trucks. Through. Why not?
Yeah.
I love that shit. Stupid does not necessarily mean it's bad or shouldn't be participated in or watched. I think arm wrestling is a stupid thing, but it is a hell of a lot of fun to watch at the end of this movie.
Oh, I'll watch. If I was turning a channel and I saw an actual no shit live wrestling, arm wrestling channel, I would be, that's it. That's my afternoon. Yeah. I feel that way about sumo competition. Like just, if there's big sweaty dudes pulling and grunting, deep down is my actual sexuality, I think.
Yeah.
Because I just drawn like a magnet, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I like seeing the extremes of humanity, you know? And
there you go.
Guys with boulder sized arms, slamming each other's arms to the table, potentially breaking
experiences. Peak human experiences, you know?
Yeah. That's what I'm in for.
shall we get to, I mean, we've kind of been spoiling the shit out of this movie. I don't think this is another movie, much like Commando, where it just can't be spoiled. Like, the premise is the movie. The movie is the premise. It's also surprising. There's a lot of, I feel like, because here's the other thing that maybe you and I don't have to share. I watched this movie a ton as a kid. Because and I've talked about how, like, I would sneak watching, like, Commando or Predator and, like, watch it between my fingers because I was kind of a pussy as a kid when I was, like, 7 or 8 years old. But in that same era, Sly Stallone made this movie, which is not R-rated, and was on cable TV constantly when I was a kid.
Sure.
And it was like this is a very kid version, for a safe version, like, action movie, you know? And I watched the hell out of it, and it was super quotable. Like, I, you know, me and my cousins would, like, do these fake arm wrestling matches all the time. So, like, maybe that's why I'm a little bit more forgiving of it, because I also see it kind of like with Star Wars kids' eyes. Like,
that's the thing. I don't know how I missed it as a kid, because I did watch a lot of television and movies on television, but I don't remember seeing this until I was in my 20s.
Yeah, might be pretty Gen X-y. What's wild is Cecily and I just started a rewatch of, you know, like, we've got dinner television, we call it, which is essentially 20-minute comedies, you know, like stuff like 30-minute
comedies.
Futurama
is what we're doing now, sure.
Exactly. We started Community, and season 1, episode 10 contains a really awesome over-the-top riff where Troy out of nowhere challenges Abed to all these different physical feats, and Abed's seen all these movies and he's like improbably beating the athletic Troy with his over the top, and he does the flip the switch trucker cap, he does the finger, you know, the thing.
So let's describe it. You know, people who haven't seen this may not know what the title means. What does the title have to do with arm wrestling? As best I can tell, this is a No, this isn't a Sly only move. This is done by another competitor at one point to him.
Yep.
So the concept of over the top is when you are, you know, engaged in an arm wrestling match, you got your arms locked. There's something you can do where you can get leverage over the other person. And there's no fucking way this works in real life. If someone can explain the physics to me, I'd love it. But you take your fingers and you get them over the top of your opponent's thumb, and that somehow gives you more leverage to slam their whole arm to the table.
Yeah.
And it's this ridiculous thing where, like, he's curling his fingers up, right? And every time you see it, you're like, oh, there's the power move, and it's supposed to be this big deal.
Yeah, and it's so... It should surprise no one that I actually looked into this.
Please tell me.
Apparently, there is a lot of technique in arm wrestling. It's not just...
But it's wrist-based, right? It's got to be.
It's a lot of wrist, but it's also a lot of, like, engaging your shoulder and your chest and your back muscles, finding ways to, like, use large portions together. But, yes, there's also positional things where if you can get a leverage of... If you can get someone, like, your wrist a little bit over the top of the other person, so you've got them backwards, they're not only... They got a mechanical disadvantage because it essentially changes the nature of the lever that they're pushing against you.
Yeah, but it has nothing to do with the move.
What it is not is extending your fingers theatrically and then slowly wrapping them over like a fucking tarantula killing a cricket. No,
right.
That is as far and to an extent that it seems like that would just be like loosening your grip, and you would probably get called on as a foul, and you get all belted up, strapped up, which.
Which he doesn't, you know, even after the strap. It's the strap doesn't stop him over the top.
The over the top. It's so it's essentially boiling down. Then there's many different ways you can do over the top. There's like the hook. There's like a lot of different moves that you can do. There's like some of its timing, like an explosive burst of power at the beginning can sometimes get. But like it all boils it down to just one slow-mo, easily recognizable, which. I mean, I guess that's because, like, the other way, if they did it realistically, it'd probably be like if you've never seen MMA before and you start watching it, your first reaction is like the ground and pound stuff is like super fucking boring, right?
Right, right.
When you learn more about MMA, the ground stuff becomes more exciting because it's like a second by second battle for position and angles. And it's like, but
yeah, if you understand why having your knee in a certain position gives you more leverage and is dangerous for the other competitor, it becomes a lot more interesting to watch. This would all just be like, oh, his wrist is slightly back at an angle. He's in danger
of
going.
I'm assuming that even if every minute of the 90-minute runtime was arm wrestling, at the end of the movie, you still probably couldn't appreciate a good over-the-top maneuver, you know,
and
at
full speed. Here's the thing. I only appreciate good UFC fights because of Joe Rogan. And I'm not going to say anything about the man other than he is an outstanding commentator when it comes to to MMA stuff. He taught me so much.
Yes.
If they had the announcer, would this work? If they had the announcer, the commentator in this movie commentating about why that, like, why the wrist angle was important and all that stuff, instead of every fucking 5 minutes at the end of this movie, the commentator gets in and is like, this is a double elimination tournament. That means you have to lose twice to be out, which means that if you lose once, you are not out. Don't forget, this is a double elimination. He says double elimination tournament in six different permutations 18 times at the end of this movie within a half an hour.
I almost started a podcast by saying this is a double elimination podcast. That means if one podcaster is eliminated, they get another chance to podcast. That's two effective chances of podcast. It's
absurd.
Okay. Let's talk about that. Why is it in the movie, and does the movie accurately observe it? Because by my counts, what should have happened at the end, as soon as Sly beat Bull, Bull should have come back and said, all right, let's see you do it twice in a row, tiny man.
So did they not show, did I miss it, or did they not show Bull losing once?
It seemed like they showed every single one of Bull's bouts, and he won them all convincingly.
Right, because otherwise, why is he the guy to beat, right?
It's kind of bullshit for them to say, like, I think, the easy way to reconcile this is, well, Bull lost. We just saw it off screen.
But
that's and to a similar extent that we didn't see a lot of double eliminations. We only saw Hawk's elimination. But like narratively, I don't understand, because he comes back and fights the same guy literally twice in a row. What kind of fucking horseshit elimination is that?
I don't know.
Whole point is you go and you fight someone else and you might have to fight that guy again. But like,
that's like the thing about double elimination. It can always come down to that, right? If one person doesn't ever lose, it will always come down to one. Well, maybe not. It could come down to four matches, right? Or at least three matches. But it's almost certainly going to be at least two.
Right.
Unless,
I understand a double elimination bracket.
Yeah.
Because most of them, it seems like even the championship, there's usually like a hypothetical line going down from that to show the result of what would happen if you had an undefeated champ. Or like you said, two undefeated champs would be a best out of three contest, essentially.
Yeah, you got to win. There will be at least three matches. So I don't know, man. That was the thing. Because while it was happening, right, and that final match goes on for 5 minutes.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, boy, this is awfully climactic for what I know can't be the final match, based on the 55 times this guy has said double elimination means one loss is not put you out of this tournament.
Don't forget, folks, it's a double elimination tournament.
But then the movie just ends there. The tournament is over after one loss by Bull, as best I can tell.
Yeah. And here's I keep coming back to structurally. Why did they think they needed Hawk to lose? Because like that's clearly they're like, we need to bring this guy to an emotional low point.
Yeah.
So Robert Loggia could come and call him a piece of shit and give him an assaulting offer to settle with the boy so he can get all chesty about it and get all raged up and then flip his switch and then win the contest.
And his son can give him the eye of the tiger, right? Yeah.
To me, like, they already had it there. Like, it seemed like going into the semifinals that he had injured himself. And was starting to doubt and thinking that, like, not only is this guy a monster and I'm kind of afraid I can't beat him, but I might have a torn rotator cuff or some shit and they're working me over. Like, I don't, like, the double elimination is such a fucking meme. I don't think it's worth it to get him. Like, I thought he was already there when he's kind of looks defeated and the doctors are working him over. And you could even have one guy say, you know, I can't vouch for your tendon. The double is just to get us that extra kick in the teeth before Robert Loggia calls him a piece of shit. And I don't think it was worth it. I really don't.
Yeah, no, and it amplifies the stakes if he has to beat him twice, right? Then it would be like, oh shit, he's not going to beat this guy twice. He can barely beat him once. But they don't do it, as best I can tell.
And there's also a lot of other anticlimactic things. Like, this bull has been mad shit talking.
Yeah, I'm going to break your shitting arm.
I'm going to break your shitting arm. This guy is a poet. His line, he has no shitting business in my ring, is the funniest. Maybe this was eventually an R rating, and they're like, you know what? Let's step back from the abyss and change all the fuckins to shittins, and we'll call it good, because what the hell? This guy who has been nonstop trash talking and violently doing, getting like all these multiple personal fouls and punching this guy in the face and all this other stuff. Why, when he gets beat, they're still strapped together. Mm-hmm. So there's many awkward shots of them both getting their arms raised in victory and Bull just kind of sitting there like calmly and kind of just waiting to be unleashed from this guy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of unintentional comedy in those first 60 seconds after championship where Bull is suddenly just completely docile about losing this match.
Right. It makes no sense. After all, I don't believe you'd be this good a sport after all the shit talking and the fouling. He punches Sylvester Stallone in the face before a match while the judge is looking, while the ref is watching.
Big gets a blood small sport. Foul. Big blood sport energy. Yeah.
Right? Like, sure, if he had thrown sand in his eyes, if he had put glass in the straps or something, like, that would be the equivalent. But, like, he's just, he turns into this nothing. Right after he wins,
because
you need the moment to be about Stallone winning,
exactly.
Not Bull losing. But
there's a better movie where that 60 seconds, Stallone's trying to celebrate with his boy,
and Bull's yanking
Bull's
on his arm.
Bull's just not having it. He's not having it. He's like just this angry Tasmanian devil being restrained by three different refs and be like, "You ain't shit. You ain't shit, Hawk. This is my shit in tournament." Yeah, no, but that's not happening because. Just so sly can enjoy the moment.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
It's really funny. They're being so, and oh my God, everything about, I feel like we've shot our load by talking about the best part of the movie. Everything about that 5-minute epic arm wrestle, like with the closer they get in and like the fundamentally funny faces that Bull is making in defeat, like right when he knows, like when they have this two shots where it's like, Sly's got the eye of the tiger and Bull's got the eye of the bull about to be slaughtered, and his just all of the facial expression this guy makes as he's going down in extreme close up are every frame of painting. It's so amazing.
Let's talk about the style. So every frame of painting on this stuff, the close ups are no shit, like close-ups of just their eyes, right? At times, they're arm wrestling.
It's like
Peter
Jackson, Lord of the Rings, Selling Temptation of the Ring, extreme close-up. Yeah,
for sure. And then this whole movie is fucking weird. So there's also this like documentary feel that they've got going on during this tournament because like they're showing real footage from an actual tournament that was set up around this movie in Vegas. We'll talk about that
in
a second.
Actually, threw an over the top. Yeah. Okay.
they're throwing in these cutaway interviews like a reality show with these arm wrestlers off screen,
promo
to the
packages
side. Which is like a wrestling event kind of thing that but it has the energy of like a documentary, like we sat down with these people and just chatted, and that's like during the height of the arm wrestling competition. So you'll see like five people get their arms slammed and then they'll cut away to Bull and go, "He's got no shit in business in my ring." And then they'll cut back.
"I drive trucks, break arms, and arm wrestle."
Yeah. And it's just weird because the rest of the movie is just like, you know, a narrative driven film. And then it cuts away to these weird things at the end.
I think they should go in the opposite direction. I was pissed that we only got 6 out of the 8 finalist video packages.
Yeah.
I wanted to know up with that thick Asian dude. What was his whole deal? And there's a mystery man who I guess you have to unlock in future DLC who's just never seen. You see 7 out of the 8 semifinalists, and it kind of sucks because, like, who's your favorite?
It's tough because Grizzly is amazing. We can talk about him in a second, but I really like Cleve Dean, who is an actual arm wrestler, because he doesn't look like he'd be an arm wrestler, right? He's just a, no offense, he's a big fat slob, right? Like, he's just a big fat dude. And he's up there crushing people's arms.
He's the Canadian guy, right? He's the Canadian one.
I don't know where he hails from, but he's, you know him when you see him. When I say he's a big fat dude, you know him when you see him. Because the rest of these guys aren't really, aside from Bull, who I believe has some muscle mass under there. And I mean, Cleve right? Cleve must have something going on under the pounds and pounds of fat. But I like him a lot.
John Grizzly is my favorite. I'm sorry. This guy who's just got a wild man. He's covered head to toe in fur. He drinks motor oil.
Swallows
a cigar. A lit cigar as he's about to go to town. Then the shot that always slayed us as kids is the follow-up shot of him drinking Alka-Seltzer.
Right.
Wait a second. I'm not done breaking down the championship. We got away from this. I got to get, like, this is, first of all, who let go? Because Bull gets two fouls in the finale. Mm-hmm. I can only assume that he got the refs assessed the letting go penalty on Bull. Is that fair?
Oh.
Because no. I felt that Sly is the one to let go.
Yeah. Yeah, he's
and
the
Bull
one.
Bull caught it. Bull called it. He's like, you fucking let go, you putting.
I mean, certainly mentally.
He knew he didn't have over the top. He knew he didn't have over the top. So he just like,
right?
But he Bill emotionally must have got the foul, let go. Right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
yeah.
Bull. Bull must have got the foul.
I think he does get the foul, and but ultimately it's moot. Like, what the fuck does a foul mean? You know, you either win or lose.
That was my follow up question, is how many fouls do you have to get to lose a match? Because it seems like two and something. Like, this isn't like a 60-minute game of basketball where you can, like, ride the bench a little bit. Like, this is
right.
A one-and-done bout, in theory.
And there's only one way to win, only one way to lose. There are no points, right? You're not scoring on points like in boxing, to where a foul just reduces your points. You win or lose. You slam the other guy's hand to the mat, or you get yours slammed.
I imagine if you commit to, like, I guess it must be three fouls and you're out, or else what the fuck? And maybe I'm almost on Bull's side, because if Sly got away with slipping hands and not putting the foul on him, then maybe the punch is retribution.
Well, the punch came before. The punch was first.
No,
right?
No. Because they were strapped in. That was the incredible thing about the punch. It's like, stop hurting yourself.
Oh, I thought it was before they strapped him in.
He punched Sly with his own fist.
He does, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe I'm coming around to Bull's way of seeing things.
Yeah, no, and I do think that I think Sly was ducking Bull. I think Bull is too strong. Like, and I also read in the production that they hired a guy even bigger than Bull, and they had to let him go the first day of filming because they're like, nobody will believe this Sylvester Stallone could beat this guy.
That's the thing, man. So much of arm wrestling is not about sheer strength; it's about leverage, right? So, like,
it's about
you
it's
have
a lot
a longer
about leverage.
Arm. They have weight classes, just like they do in boxing, because of that.
Sure.
If you have a longer arm, you get more leverage over the person that you're
competing.
That's
the thing. It feels like there should be, because, like, it's my understanding that, like, if it's not even just long bones, it's like if your tendon is attached 2 millimeters higher up the bone than the average person, that is going to increase into like a 10 or 15% strength boost, all else being equal. It's like almost like you got to, like, okay, measure how long your radius and your ulna are, how long, because, like, yeah, just the raw beef is a big part of it. But if you're one of those people that have chimpanzee arms, you're going to win even though you got like Clint Eastwood muscles, like, and then you get a guy that looks like you know what I'm saying, like, I'm not saying Clint
wiry.
Eastwood looks like a wuss, he's got those wiry ropey the table jockeying that goes on, and the ref ego where the ref's like, I'm the ref, you put your elbows here, like, right. Calm down, everybody knows where the elbows go. There's big cushions for those where else would you put your elbow?
Yeah.
If you were going to do this bout, you know, like, settle down, ref man.
there are some other really good, my favorite part of the arm wrestling stuff is always seeing people, like, go for the slam, right? Because like there's this jerking sort of thing they do to like really
the power.
Get leverage on them.
Blow
and power. Surprise them. Yeah, surprise them with a sudden burst of power. I always really like seeing that. And there are a couple matches where like they'll do three shots like that, and then the guy just gives up. You know, good stuff. There's one shot that I almost can't watch in this movie, and it's where one guy actually gets his elbow just destroyed, like broken, and pulls his arm around in the wrong direction. And that wasn't a thing they planned for or anything, but it really happened during filming.
It's like, because like you hear all these stories about like, oh, Ben-Hur during the Colosseum scene, a dude gets ran over by a horse and it's real. And it's like, is it? And like, oh, and in the one scene in Wizard of Oz, you can see one of the guys that hung himself from a tree. It's like, I don't know. Right. And like three men and a little lady, there's a ghost in the this real, like a dude's arm got broken in half.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, it's not like it feels like his, I don't know, like his elbow disintegrated, because it's only really nasty if you look at his elbow. Yeah. Because it just develops three joints instantly.
Yeah.
And it's what's remarkable about it, too, is like the guy looks kind of like in dumbfoundedness for a couple of seconds, like a three beat. Mm-hmm. And then he just screams.
Yeah.
And I always wonder is like, is that what it took for the adrenaline to be overcome? And he actually felt how bad that hurt? Or is he like, shit, I'm on camera. It's rolling. I might as like, kind of like Aragorn breaking his toe on the orc helmet. Like, fuck it, I'm going to use it, you know,
or kind DiCaprio of cutting himself in 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
Not 12 Years a Slave. The other. Shit. Django Unchained. No.
Oh, yeah. With on the skull. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers have a chance to exercise their rights under the Patreon pact we've made by voting for the next pulp movie that Jim and I will be covering. If you're one of the elite few backers at the executive producer level, don't miss your chance to influence us. Hurry over to patreon.com/baldmove and vote in the latest movie poll before it closes on Wednesday morning.
And for all other club members, we've got an all-new episode of Lunch with Jim and Aaron this Friday afternoon. Catch the live stream at 1 p.m. to interact with us and your fellow munchers over on Patreon, or you can wait for the podcast to drop later that day.
If you want even more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
I want to talk about the kid.
All right.
Because we talk about the kid a lot, and I think he did an okay job, but I also think this kid is fundamentally... like, he started off, I think, pretty realistically written.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's this uptight kid that's sent to a military academy, and they do this, they do this great establishing shot of... you know, him at commencement, I guess, and he's kind of looking around expecting somebody to be there and nobody's there for him. And then this roughneck guy picks him up out of nowhere. No one communicated this to him. He's been told this guy is a drug dealer, a deadbeat, like his grandfather specifically told him not to do the what he's being done. He tries to get away from him. Like, there's a lot of this kid where he just acts like a massive pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. And then still but there's a fundamental disconnect, because like I like that early spark where he's like clearly trying to split the difference between his military academy training, yes sir, no sir, ultra respectful, mm-hmm. and being a punk ass.
Yeah.
And I feel like they abandon that and he just starts being cruel. Like, you're a dumbass, dad.
You're in a different strata than I am.
Yeah, I'm just better than you. I'm sorry. And it's kind of like some scary Nazi genetics kind of backgrounds, too. And it just... And then the turning point of the movie involves Stallone getting so tired of this kid bullying him that he's like, oh, you think my job, so you just drive a truck. Which is... a child's way of winning an argument, I gotta say. Okay, you know, yeah. Like, look, I'm not saying it's the easiest thing in the world to drive a truck. I just know that if I went to like a 6-week class, I would be an expert at it. All right. This isn't like rocket science or brain surgery. But then the resolution of this guy, you know, emotionally trying to bully his child is seen as like this uplifting thing. But it's also a 12-year-old piloting a big rig down a highway.
Yeah, with like, I swear when they start off, they go to a different place. They go to some back road where nobody is and there's like just farmland or whatever. But when they start off that scene, I think there's a continuity error or something, because I could have sworn they were on like the side of a mountain with a cliff on one side, cars whizzing by on the other. And he's handing over control of this big rig with a full trailer, by the way. He's like hauling shit at that point.
Yeah,
to this child.
There's a lot of, and it works out, but like it was constructed as a way for this guy to, I think, humiliate the kid, and the kid just happened to be good at the thing. And then there's another scene where he arranges his kid to hustle Scott Farkas from A Christmas Story.
Is it legit him?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay. It could have been.
Yeah. It could have been. He's stamped out of the same mold of like kid bully, right? Mm-hmm. And this kid's like, what, 2-3 years older than him, probably got 20, 30, 40 pounds at least, couple inches in height advantage. And he's like, hey, you got to arm wrestle this guy. It's going to be good for your confidence. And this guy is emotionally bullying the shit out of this kid. He's calling him like a wimp and saying mm-hmm. he's going to break his arm and he's going to make him pee his pants and cry for his mommy and doing all this shit. And then the kid gets beat and he mm-hmm. runs out there and's like, I don't know. It's like, you know, you're rich and weak, and I'm poor and strong, and I got, and he gives this like, I've seen him do this like so, like in the movie Balboa, he does this to his elder son. This speech about how you got to take the knocks and you got to keep getting up and you can't be a quitter. Mm-hmm. But he's giving this to a 12-year-old who's confronting a 15-year-old bully that you set up, and he's like, it doesn't matter if you win or lose, but you can tell that it kind of does matter. And you're going to want this. And then he sends him up there. And this kid wins because he goes over the top, number one. And number two, the mm-hmm. movie needs it.
Yeah. Gave him the eye of the tiger.
There's like these two scenes where the, like, I don't know that the movie's aware of like how shitty what Sly is doing to this kid. He's setting himself up in a place where he can, will probably fail. Should fail.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the truck driving scene, I like a little bit more, because I mean, like, look, the father teaching the son to drive is a bonding moment between father and son, typically, right? I mean, you just went through this with your kid. That was probably a pretty good time for you.
Uh-huh,
scary, but also a pretty good time.
Wasn't 12 years old, and it wasn't a big rig, but
right, and it wasn't a public road, probably.
Yeah,
but I kind of like how it morphs into that sweet moment of like a father teaching his son to drive, and how the kid sort of starts getting into it at the end. Like, yeah. Okay, but it becomes something different by the end of that scene, which I enjoyed. But you're right. It starts off as like, yeah, kind of a prove it to this kid that he's not any better than you, and a little bit of bullying.
And especially since I think I'm with you. I think the truck stuff works a lot better because it does morph into, I think that's one of the important things you got to do to your kids as they become teenagers, is you got to be their hype man. Like, as their parents, like, you got to be the one telling them that, like, you know, and you could probably take it too far the other way, but like telling your kid that they look sharp, they look put together, they're really nailing whatever they're doing. You're proud, like, you know, like, hey, watch out for Mike. Here comes like that. The kids love that shit. And it's like, you know, rain to flowers. But I think the other part, not only is it just seems like he's setting this kid up to fail in like almost a cruel way, but also Stallone, for whatever reason, is not really engaged in material.
Yeah.
So he's like, the speech feels half-hearted from him. Mm-hmm. And I guess, again, I've seen him give this identical speech like three different times in other movies where he crushes it.
Yeah.
But this is not one.
This lose like a winner stuff. Yeah, it's not quite as good. Also, I don't like the message that he's giving his kid here. It's,
right.
There's a line where he tells the kid, like, the world doesn't meet anybody halfway. You got to do what's best for you. And you want something, you got to take it. That to me is rationalized selfishness that he is teaching his kid. Is like
an entitlement.
Right. And it's exactly why this kid hates him, because he did that. My guess is he did that in you know, his childhood, right? Like,
he's telling on himself.
His kid's 2 years old, and he was like, fuck this, I hate my wife, I hate having a kid, I'm gonna go out and just be a fucking trucker, and I'm gonna arm wrestle, and I'm gonna live my life, fuck these people,
right?
And your life has been substantially worsened by that, and now you're gonna take this advice and do it to your kid potentially? What the hell? It's a terrible message.
Because that's the thing, is like, reading between the lines, I think that this Hawk guy came from nothing, which is not bad, and he falls in love with the uptown girl, mm-hmm. and her dad's probably blowing him a decent amount of shit about, like, worried about he's going to be a shiftless bum and a loser, and Stallone, I guess, hears that for about a year, and then's like, you know what? Fuck it, I'm gonna be a shiftless bum and loser. And he goes off and proves the old man right until his wife, which that's, oh Jesus Christ, this is so unrealistic. This guy left them, and he still refers to her as his wife. She still calls him his husband. They call each other honey. Like, they have this close relationship.
10 years ago, he left.
Okay, this goes into another fucking mystery of this thing. Who hid the letters from Mikey?
Oh, yeah. His mom, because, or his grandfather?
I thought the bombshell revelation would be that the grandfather has done it, that he was going to go through. But Mikey goes up and goes through into his granddad's office, and he pries into all the stuff, and there's nothing there. And he goes into another storage facility, there's nothing there. He goes into what I can only think is his dead mom's bedroom, and in her various purses are stuffed everything. The other smoking gun is she got all of Stallone, like, his mom got all of Stallone's letters, all of Hawk's letters. So, like, if it was the grandpa putting the kibosh, I would think he would put it on all levels.
Sure.
What is this? What the fuck is this mom playing at? And why doesn't Stallone, once in the whole fucking movie, when he's asking her, saying, like, hey, you know, I've been writing this kid like every fucking day and he's not getting the letters. What the fuck? Like, why?
Yeah, why did I never get a response? And why, if she's on her deathbed and she wants them to reconnect, doesn't she confess to him? Look, I never gave him your letters, so this is going to be an obstacle you need to overcome with him. Or give the kid the letters and let him know, I'm sending your father to pick you up. Here are all the letters he wrote you. He doesn't actually hate you.
Yeah. Like, what's the rationale for taking that stuff? Also, like, right. Her rationale for, you need to understand, you've only known one way of living. I mean, there's definitely value for if you have a trust fund kid to, like, you know, I don't know how the hell you expose him to the quote unquote real world. I don't know, make him serve a couple years in Peace Corps or something. But, like, drifting the roads with your dad, who's got like a 1950s truck that's about to blow up, it doesn't seem like a great way to do that. And I don't know, like, the grandfather never seemed like he's super aggressive or like abusive. Like the kid,
yeah.
You know, when Hawk's in jail and the lawyer's like, "Hey, we're gonna take you for full custody," and he's like, "What does Mikey think?" He's like, "Well, ask him yourself." Mike's asking reasonable questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, where would I stay? What would we do? How would I go to school? Yeah, right? And Stallone has no answers for that. He still, that's the thing, by the end of the movie, none of those answers will be answered too. But like, I never understand, like, Core's like, why is he be giving this extra shot? It's not like, hey, we want you to be a part of this kid's life. He'll still stay in our mansion, of course, and attend our private schools. But we would like you to come by and, you know, when you're in town from your long haul, hang out. It's like, you got to choose. Do you want to be drifting with your dad or the stability of a family?
Yeah, this movie is asking me to hold like two different, this is some serious cognitive dissonance in my head the entire time. Like, it wants me to believe that Hawk is a piece of shit. And that he has to go to great lengths to earn back the trust of his child. But Sylvester Stallone, you know, in the moments where he does like turn on Sylvester Stallone charm and stuff, he's actually like, the whole time he's playing this really nice guy, right? Who's totally changed, sure. And he feels bad about what he did and he wants to reconnect.
Whatever, like, he did.
He's super sympathetic in every way except for the story. Because the story is telling me he's not, right? Like, he's this guy who made this choice to leave his family and has been gone for 10 years, but they never tell me why either. They don't want me to know why. They don't want me to know enough about that to hate him, because they want me to look at him and like him. And I can't get over the clash of those two things.
Yeah, like, the movie doesn't, it's like, look, it's his dad. That's enough, right? And I'm like, I know a lot of dads, and no, it's not.
Right?
No, it is fucking not. Especially if he's got a situation like as his great, which maybe that's not ideal from certain other angles. But like, it's a lot fucking better than sleeping in a goddamn truck that initially didn't even have a sleeper cap. That night that they slept upright in this old ass fucking semi had to be the worst night of sleep that kid's ever had.
Yeah, and simultaneously, they want me to hate Robert Loggia, and I can't hate him in this movie because he's talking about a deadbeat guy who left his family 10 years ago, hasn't spoken a word as best he knows to them, and like wants what's best for this kid, doesn't abuse the kid. I can't, like, if this guy was a piece of shit.
Kidnapped. But that was after they spent the night at a rest stop at the side of the road in this guy's, like, again, bedless cab. So
true. He doesn't have the kid kidnapped. But like, I don't know. I never saw anything that I was like, God damn, he's a real piece of shit. It's all reputation, right? It's like, oh, he's the rich guy with the mansion and the high power business guy. So he must be an asshole.
Your dad dealing drugs and all that kind of stuff. And
the movie shortcuts that shit too much, in my opinion.
That's pretty egregious to tell a kid that his dad deals drugs. Like, you never want to like tear down a child's parent in service of trying to protect them. But
do we know that he didn't?
By 80s, and that's the thing, is like, maybe mom told him all that, because again, I don't see any smoking gun evidence that the grandpa's a bad guy, other than the movie wants me to think that Sylvester Stallone just deserves the not just have time with his kid, but to have primary custody of his kid, for his kid to live with him.
Right? Like, that's the thing. If you genuinely thought that Hawk was a bad guy and you could be forgiven for that because he ran out on his family 10 years ago.
Yeah.
If you genuinely think he's a bad guy, wouldn't you do everything you could to fight for custody of this child, of your grandchild?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I'm a little sympathetic to Robert Loggia's position in this movie. So to just like shortcut it so much to say he's rich, he's bad, done deal, is like not compelling to me.
And let's break down the poor life decisions that we see Lincoln Hawk make in 90 minutes of film. I've got a list.
All right.
Number one, he named his son Michael. What is this kid's full name?
Well, I'm going to go over to IMDb and I'm going to look at this kid's full name, because it's not what you think. I know what you want me to say. IMDb says that this kid's name is Michael Cutler. His grandfather's last name. How is that possible?
So Sly Stallone is a putative father?
Dude, I don't know, because his name's Lincoln Hawk. His mother's name is Christina Hawk, which by extension, like you were asking me here, would make the kid's name Mike Hawk.
Yep. The Simpsons joke, essentially. If the Simpsons could say that on national television, Mike Hawk.
It's Seymour Butts. Yes, this movie is a Seymour Butts.
So I see that the Robert Luge, he's a hero. He's saving this kid from trauma.
Apparently.
He's Michael Coulter or whatever.
Like, did he adopt the kid officially? Was that the thing?
And if that's the case, why is his lawyer raving about, like, there's no way you're going to get cut? If he's adopted him, he's already the fucking kid's legal. I think that's just, I think that's IMDb being cowards.
Yes, I agree.
Secondly, why does Sylvester Stallone show up late to this kid's commencement?
Traffic.
Did he not?
Traffic.
I mean, he's bucketing himself off in some parking lot. Like, I just think it's poor planning. Your first time, and it's causing the kid distress. He's looking around. Where is anybody? There's nobody here for me.
Yeah.
There's nobody from here.
Why is Robert Loggia there? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. Oh, he's sending for, so that's like maybe a point against Robert Loggia that he's sending his rich butler for him but anyway.
Right.
He picks up the kid. First decision he makes, I'm going to take him to the kind of low rent trucker bar where impromptu wrestling, arm wrestling bouts are issued. To the extent that there's an arm wrestling ring set up.
Right.
The kid, and as soon as the arm wrestling's on, he just abandons the kid. Like, Bull could have grabbed that kid, ripped him in half like a phone book, and nothing could have been done. You know? And it looked like Bull kind of wanted to.
Yeah.
Is that your dad? Yeah. Too fucking bad. Too shitting bad. I don't know. The second thing is his father-in-law kidnaps his child. He saves him by ramming the vehicle off the road.
Yep.
None of these people wearing seatbelts, by the way, and pinning it against other vehicles.
Yeah. Smashing into it with his big rig. Driving it off the road. Dangerous. Extremely dangerous.
So, and all the chicanery and the exercise routine and the wrestling matches, they arrive at the hospital too late for his mother to for the kid to see his mother before she dies. That's an asshole move. Mm-hmm. But the kid renounces him at this point. He goes to the funeral in his finest black denim shirt, and he interrupts the priest. He walks like the priest is in the middle of his sermon. He walks up and the priest, taken aback, stops.
What? I'm a
and
grieving
he lays
father.
Flowers
you're going to stop a grieving father from seeing his kid?
The tube's got to go in the grave. he's got to stop the thing and then stare down his son and then walk off. Like, what the fuck? What kind of crazy shit? He constantly talks about wanting to own his own trucking business.
Mm-hmm.
But he's an independent trucker. It says on the side of his thing, Hawks Trucking. You just need to expand. You got the business. You just need to expand it. Number two, the final thing is he goes in this competition. He owns a truck that's worth $7,000. He sells it. And he goes to the betting booth and says, what's the odds on Lincoln Hawk? And the guy's like 20-1. And then the guy's got this whole monologue about, these are the lowest odds. These are the longest odds of it. You must be a desperate loser to put money on this guy, pal. Puts this whole... So this guy loses and he has nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's down on his luck. This is his last... Come to find out, if he wins this fucking tournament, he gets a brand new $200,000 truck and $150,000 cash prize.
Cash.
Which is more than the maximum payout that he'll get by mortgaging his entire future. Why is he doing this, Jim?
Because he has supreme confidence in himself. He's.
But he doesn't.
If he loses, he's going to lose like a winner. He's going to lose like a winner. That's what he would say.
He's guaranteeing if he loses, he's going to lose like a loser. Because he's got, I'm telling you, he's got nothing. If
I know,
he wins his son's love back by the end of the movie, either way, I think.
But he's got hospital bills afterward, right? If he gets his arm torn off too.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, this is kind of poignant because he's at his rope and he's just going to bet everything, hoping that he can get enough money to maybe build a better life. But that was already the pot that he. So it's like, oh my God, yeah. I don't understand the brinksmanship here. Mm-hmm. It seems insane.
But I don't know. Maybe he was like giving himself the eye of the tiger, right? Like if you think, I got a fallback plan, you're not liable to give your all during the competition. You're thinking about if I do lose, I'm okay. I got this plan and this plan. I don't know. Maybe he needed that boost. We talked briefly about the exercise stuff, and I want to talk more about it because they set this up too. There's a line where, you know, they're about to go to sleep in the terrible neck breaking cabin that he's got with no bed. And he says, tomorrow we'll exercise. And I'm like, yes, I can't wait because I remember what their exercises consisted of. This movie wants me to think that if I can look like Sly Stallone if I do a couple of stretches and some roadside push-ups. In addition to, he has built, and I don't know, you know, his $250,000 truck that he wins probably doesn't come with this feature. It's got a built-in gym in his old truck. He's got a
just
fucking
for your right side, just for your strong arm.
And that's what I love about it. How lopsided must this guy be, right? His right arm is jacked. His left side is withering away to nothing. I guess it's holding the wheel.
Look at that one episode of Rick and Morty where Morty gets that Timothy's arm grafted to him. Yeah, that's what he should look like.
Totally. Driving dozens of hours per week, working out nothing but his right arm.
Just slamming those plates. Just counting the mile markers and slamming those plates.
It's glorious. Trust me, you will not look like him doing that.
That's one of my most enduring memories of this film. Like, I thought there was a lot more arm wrestling in this film. I thought he arm wrestled like three or four minor bouts before he got to the first one or the end one. There's only essentially one. Mm-hmm. And I thought my enduring memory of this film is this him like, you know, Eye of the Tiger driving down the road, pumping that iron. Yeah. The other thing, I always think that he's got a much nicer truck. I think that I end with the memory of him having the dream truck. And I think that's what it looks like. But like, I always forget that he has got the most basic model of truck you can think of. It's old as shit, and it doesn't have any creature comforts whatsoever.
No, it's falling apart.
No, I don't. And like, I don't know how this guy ekes out a living. He must. I mean, he must make tons of money because he's got nothing he spends it on. He only earns money hustling guys on the road. It seems like.
Yeah,
I don't know. Where is this? Like, that's the other things. Like, where is this excess money going to?
I think it's an era of trucking too, where it was a more lucrative, right? Or you haven't
an
been
an independent trucker with your own rig.
Yeah,
yeah, you should make fucking bank, man.
Right.
Good at accounting. I just gotta, you know, give it away.
I don't know if I like this kid. I think he's got a lot of energy. He's cute. And it's not the kid. It's the character.
Yes.
This kid is a know-it-all piece of shit at the beginning of this movie, right? He's talking about, oh, your fucking cholesterol levels must be through the roof, old man, eating that bullshit. I fine dine every night. I got three-course meals coming to me. Foie gras, Wolf motherfucker. And then he reveals his own stupidity and his own ignorance, right? He says, there's a line in here where he tells, trying to say how dumb his dad is. He tells him the average adult has the intelligence of a 15-year-old, which if this kid knew anything, would realize this is a mathematical impossibility. Like if the average adult has the level, the average adult defines the intelligence level of the average adult, right? You can't have an average adult being the intelligence level of a 15-year-old because they would be the intelligence level of an average adult.
Yes, right.
Definitionally. So this kid is an idiot.
It seems like one of those truthy facts you would read in like a magazine for kids, you know, like the weekly reader. Did you know that the average adult is barely smarter than you, you know?
Right.
God.
Ugh,
and that's the thing is they need like the movie worked a lot better as soon as they ditched the odd couple routine, which they kind of pretty much do once he teaches them to drive the big rig. And I guess that does.
Yep.
That the thing is like we're making fun of a lot of stuff this movie, but a lot of stuff for this movie is so stupid because it's literally the only thing that could happen because of the way they've constructed the movie. But even then, there's wild choices, like when Mike left of his own free will, Lincoln decides to just ram. He's like, oh, he pulls up, says, hey, I want to visit my son. And the guy's like, no. And he has all of the legal cards. In fact, there's a pointless subset scene where Robert LaLuigia's lawyer is telling him how legally fucked he is in far as his claims. And like, there's no court in the land that will ever back his claim against Lincoln Hawks. And he, in a fit of rage, he rams this guy's gate down, drives through his 300 fucking yard front door with all these Venus de Milo's and fountains he's ramming, and just doesn't drive through his front door. He drives through his front house, like caves this thing and like only a semi can. And because of that, gets arrested and loses everything. I guess I need to add that to his litany of crimes.
What the crimes of stupidity? Yeah, it's a real dumb move.
Yeah, I don't know that you can just like that's the kind of thing that you can just like not press charges on. That's so fucking insane.
And I mean, wasn't like
what if he killed somebody?
Right. Well, wasn't mission accomplished at that point too? Couldn't he have hung the banner out and said, "I got the kid home"? And we bonded?
True.
Like, he did exactly what his mother wanted, right?
And if I want to, I just got to do some paperwork. I probably don't even need a lawyer. I can just do some paperwork and get this kid if I want him full time.
Yeah, it was the inevitable outcome of his whole purpose.
And it's like, the thing is also, I feel like this movie might have worked better if the kid was older. Like, if this kid was, like, you know, about ready to leave high school, maybe. But, like, the whole time I'm like, well, he's 12 years old. You get full custody of him. What happens at the end of the summer? Because it's not like he graduated college. He graduated. I couldn't even figure out what he graduated from, because that military academy seemed like to went all the way to 18. It's like, well, okay, you're going into middle school or whatever. What was your plan? Like, you've got no address. How are you going to get this kid to school? How are you going to like give this kid health care? How are you going to like? There's no and the movie's wanting me to get this result, but I'm like, well, if he wins, I don't like the result, because like the other thing that the Hawk makes clear is driving the truck is everything to him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the beginning of this movie makes that clear, right? They show him driving it romantically. They show him washing it.
He's so happy. Yeah, right. Loves it. And they do make that life look attractive. Like, they do that kind of Easy Rider thing, which is just glorious shots of him driving through fucking Monument Valley. Like, they never show the Nebraska. They never show rolling down, you know, I-70 West for 12 hours through Nebraska. It's always fucking Monument Valley or, you know, like something like really Sedona, Arizona, shit like that. But they do make that open road look really fun and seductive in this movie.
Mm-hmm. There's at least one more thing I want to talk about here, and it's the music. We kind of mentioned it, but I feel like we need to talk about it a little bit more, because I was surprised when I went and actually looked up what music was in this. First of all, you need to know, stylistically, this is budget Top Gun music, right? This is like the C-tier shit that Kenny Loggins was doing.
No, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It has nothing going on.
Like big names. You want Danger Zone? You're not going to get Danger Zone. You're going to get Kenny Loggins doing a slow jam.
Right. But he's on the soundtrack. Like, big artists are on this soundtrack. Sammy Hagar has a song on this
Winner
soundtrack.
Takes it all, baby.
Kenny Loggins. Eddie Money, who has several 80s hits that you'd probably know.
100%.
The lead singer from Cheap Trick does a solo thing on this. It's like they spent some effort and money on the soundtrack, and it came out god awful.
It's
most
terrible.
Anemic, limpest ballads you've ever heard.
It's all B-tracks is what it is.
Yeah.
It's all, there's no, they needed something that's like kick ass, and they needed something poignant, but they use this like middle of the road appropriately entitled Meet Me Halfway for everything. That's the spine of an arm wrestling movie. A log and slow jam.
So they hired, from what I read, some Italian composer to write all of these songs. And I think that's the problem, right? They didn't have the rock stars writing the songs. They just had them performing them.
It's unforced error, yeah.
Right? Yeah, you get Sammy Hagar having fucking write a banger because he can, you know?
Yeah.
Kenny Loggins.
And he said, Sammy is like very dismissive about this whole, that's like everything. Everyone's weirdly like, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, it got away from us. I didn't think we should do it. And we did it. You know, that's everyone's recollections of this movie.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing this movie ever came out. It really only came out because Sylvester Stallone is in it, right?
I felt like it was wildly popular. Oh, no. It had a $25 million box office. $25 million budget and made $16 million at the box office.
It was a bomb, critically.
I just remember fucking loving this as a kid, though. Like,
sure.
I feel like Gen X has fond memories of this film for a lot of different reasons. And it's like, that's to say, is this a badass film? I say the last 30 minutes get it there easily.
Yes.
And every act has a signature badass moment. There is the initial... a showdown between the budget Hulk Hogan, great value Hulk Hogan,
Smasher.
The second act, the second act turning to third act features Stallone throwing one of Lugia's thugs through a plate glass window and being it's talk time's over. Mm-hmm. I think there's the element of truck driving and like you know pumping iron as you're pushing iron, inherently badass. This, though, is like one of the softest badass flicks I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think 90% of why I like this movie is because it's such a niche topic, right? Two niche topics. You don't get a lot of trucker movies.
Yeah.
And you get zero arm wrestling movies, mainstream films. So, like, it combines two very niche things that make me go, like, sit up and just say, oh, that's something different. You know, I've not seen this before. And so I do like it. I do, you know, like I said earlier, I like it in concept more than action, but it works as a thing to laugh at and a thing to go, oh, well, that's a part of society I've not seen.
Yeah. It's funny because it's an interesting place where this comes out in Stallone's career. Because he was like simultaneously red hot and like stone cold. Mm-hmm. This was contemporary with Rambo, the second Rambo, First Blood Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
This was contemporary with Rhinestone, which is a Dolly Parton thing that like bombed all over the place.
Hmm.
This was contemporary with Rocky IV, which was a huge hit.
Wow.
And Over the Top was a flop. It's weird because like unlike Schwarzenegger, who just had like smash after smash after smash and fell off later. Like, I feel like Stallone was perfectly capable of making some of the biggest bombs at the same time he was making at the top of his career. And it didn't really affect anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's a
strange movie, man. And I kind of looked up like, okay, what is the reputation of this film amongst the communities that are its subject matter?
They gotta love it, right?
Trucker films. I looked at a lot of top 10 trucker films lists, and this one never made it into the top 10, which shocked me because I can't even think of 10 other trucking movies.
The fuck?
Right? But it always got an honorable mention. It was like Over the Top, you know, is this movie about a trucker arm wrestling competition. It's not perfect, but you know, it's a trucker movie. So I don't think like truckers love it too much. And I don't know that there is like a arm wrestling film community or that you could put together even like
an arm
a top
wrestling
three
community
list.
That has to have an opinion. Like, do they?
Yeah. But where do I go to find that? Right. Do I go to the arm wrestling National Arm Wrestling Foundation forums? Yeah, I don't even know.
Yeah. Interesting.
We didn't really talk about that. The tournament part of the Vegas section of this movie. We said we were going to, right?
Do you want, I felt like we did, we talked about all the different the big controversies and stuff. What stone did we leave unturned?
Just how it came to be. So like that tournament was a real thing. And they decided when this, they found out this movie was coming out that, like, you know, some arm wrestling foundation or league or whatever decided we're going to put on a big tournament around this movie to try and capitalize on it. And they did
use all the, it was really smart because they did all the same logos and stuff so that it was a perfect dual purpose.
Right. And in fact, a lot of the footage that you see at the end of this movie is from that tournament. They just were on site filming it. And, you know, the tournament happened. The prize was real. It was a truck. Mm-hmm. It was, which I don't, are a lot of arm wrestlers truckers? Is that like a hand in hand combo that I don't know about? Or
there is a, I guess, a well-established trucker league. Cause I thought that was really funny. They had, like, you know, from the West Coast division, from the truckers division, from the Teamsters union, like they had all these like wild regional, you know, but I'm from thinking the Texas, like, Wildcat division. Like, it's, yeah.
If I was really into arm wrestling, a truck as a top prize would not interest me in the least, right? I would be pawning that thing the next day.
I think don't you think most people that, like, win the showcase showdown at, like, I always thought that, like, if you know, I got a Nissan Altima from Bob Barker, I would just fucking sell that thing or take it. I think they actually offer you the cash value too. Like, there's like, you can either take that thing or offered the cash value of it, and I would always take the cash value over. I mean, I don't know, certain, like, they had like a sweet, they had a sweet 98 Impala and it was 97. I might get tempted, but in general, surely you can sell that to someone who does need one for approaching its value, right?
So 75% nice. Easy.
Yeah. And then you still pay the taxes. That's still probably 125 grand in the bank, right?
Sure. Or you set up a contract, right? You take the truck prize, you say, okay, you can drive my truck, but I'm going to get X amount of the dollar. Ooh, there you go. Start your own
trucker company. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that always bothered me that, like, the top prize is a truck when you can't guarantee that arm wrestlers care about a truck.
But it says something about the field of competition that is a prize that is extravagant and also not derided as, like, what kind of fucking, like, it got people to show up, right?
Yeah. And I like, they show at one point when Sylvester Stallone, and my God, the music does him no favors. The music is like going full ballad, right? And he's walking through the show floor of a Vegas convention. It's so stupid. Mm-hmm. But on that show floor, there's like Fujitsu and Duracell. And I'm like, okay, these are actually companies that truckers might want to buy products from, right? Fujitsu probably makes some radios and truck accessories and stuff and batteries. I mean, they're always on the road. Of course they need batteries.
Yeah. Yep.
Pretty good stuff there. But yeah, so this was a real tournament. I imagine the show floor there was part of it and real. Yep. And they used a bunch of that footage. And then Stallone came in the day after this tournament ended, and they filmed all of his scenes there. And they used, as extras in the stands and stuff, all the people that were there for the tournament the previous day, which I thought
I read that it was a 2-day tournament, and during the rest day they filmed it. So they still had everyone was still at the hotel to see that thing, and they just had everybody back and said, but it's the exact same crowd and a lot of the same, you know,
and all arm wrestlers were there. So you had them, you know, there to compete against Stallone still. And
right. Yeah. But unfortunately, you can only make a 30-minute arm wrestling film. You got to add to make an arm wrestling work. You got to add a trucking element and a child custody dispute.
Yeah, they could have made a better movie. They really could have made a better movie around arm wrestling if it wasn't such a fucking bummer. I didn't need the mom to die. Like, she dies during
should have been the inciting event. She just died, and in a surprise event, she made custody of the grandchild father contingent on Michael freely choosing it after spending a summer with his dad. Boom.
Yes, perfect.
You said almost all the problem. Tone everything down. Don't make the kidnapping arc. Don't have him
a sad
crashing
scene
through
in
gates
the
and
prison?
Almost killing grandpa. Yeah. Yeah, don't. We don't need any of that shit. Like I said, and I think the film works better if this kid is like a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
Where he's got a little bit more agency, and like, you're not feeling like he's just like, oh man, if he's, this kid ends up with Sly and he's got no truck, it's going to be great. You know,
get Corey Feldman in there. Corey Feldman in 1986 would have been like perfect for this kid, right?
I don't know. Was he?
He's a bit
would
of
that
a
make
punk.
Him like 14 or 15, and he could play a little bit older. Maybe.
Yeah. He's a bit of a punk, but you couldn't have had him in some kind of military school either. I don't think that would work. But
yeah. And he's just like, because I don't think that like the reason the Scott Farkas scene didn't work is because this kid's like 3 years older and manifestly just bigger and stronger.
Yeah.
Like if you had a kid that's like an average, because you could find like some like freakish. Like 16 or 17 year old, and you pit him against like a normal 16 year old, and you still got the angle, but it still feels a little less like there's like high stakes bullying or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's not. But the core that's there is interesting, and I still like every couple of years I love watching it because it's a completely ridiculous film that no one other than the kid feels like they're fully bought. And the wrestlers, to be fair, the arm muscles themselves and the actors portraying them. Are fucking bringing peak mid-80s WWF energy to everything they're doing.
Mm-hmm. To the point where I thought some of them might have been pro wrestlers.
You mentioned the product placement. The most prominent product placement is Alka-Seltzer.
Oh.
How much money did Alka-Seltzer get to have this guy slam after motor oil? But also, I think the union guy's wearing an Alka-Seltzer t-shirt the whole time. Like they're really? Getting repped throughout the whole last 30 minutes, by one of the semifinalists.
That's interesting because I saw the most prominent product placement as Bowflex when Stallone is at the tournament and he's pumping iron and they shoot at an angle where you can clearly see the Bowflex logo.
Oh, interesting. On the machine.
But I missed the Alka-Seltzer stuff. So, man, there is another element entirely that we didn't talk about in this movie, and it's fashion.
Oh, shit.
I mean, this movie... can only be described as 80s as fuck. Like, the tank tops that these arm wrestlers are wearing, the hairstyles, the mullets, the frizzy, the feathers, the feathered haircuts.
They're not so much tank tops as butchered t-shirts. You know, they've cut the sleeves and collars out of every one of them.
Yeah. And they're the type, the ones that they didn't cut to make. They're the long stringy ones, right? Like the stringy tank top straps don't even cover your nipples. They're just like all your shit's hanging out there. The deep V goes all the way to your navel. The fashion is fantastic. If you want to see a slice of what I presume was like high trucker fashion at the time, I don't even know how to describe it because it's not like it's a different vibe from the stuff you would normally see in movies in the 80s because these are supposed to be like lowlifes or whatever, right? The weird part of society.
It's very much like boat sport and travel show type attendees and professional wrestling and maybe with a little bit of 80s hair metal.
Yeah.
In the hairstyle. Totally. And like, because some of these guys are like bleach blonde frizz dudes and gold crosses in their ears, and it looked like they could be shredding in Poison or something.
I mean, half the enjoyment of watching those last 30 minutes is just looking at the people,
the characters.
Mm-hmm.
There's like some fucking, there's a Jimmy Superfly looking guy. There's like so much crazy shit going on in this. There's the raging Irishman. It's crazy. I feel like I'm I could spill a whole bunch more ink on the ladies division. I got a big kick out of the ladies arm wrestling division, which I guess didn't get their own championship round. They just get the permanent undercard. Come on now. There's a whole fucking movie just in the ladies arm wrestling division.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I'm about done. I'm over the top.
Same here.
Speaking of fashion, I do have something coming shipped our way that one of us is going to wear for the live watch.
Oh my god.
The watch party. And again, if Bezos, don't be cruel, if he's kind, at the time of recording it's still available. We're going to watch Over the Top this Thursday on Theatrical Thursdays. All you need is an Amazon Prime account and you need a free Twitch account. It takes 30 seconds to hook those babies up. And you can watch the movie in real time with us and the Fantastic Fall Movie Community. It's going to be a hoot. It'll be the third time I've seen it recently because I watched it once with my wife and I watched it this morning to do my notes and make my jokes. The notes and jokes pass, we call it.
Uh-huh.
Don't forget, this working Wednesdays, we'll be doing more badass debates. We're going to be talking about refining the rules, going over the rules of the three C's, and changing some rulings that we had from last year, instituting new rulings. Of course, we'll also, as we're doing it, review our badass list. You can always nominate new badasses for consideration that we'll be doing next week. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's badass weeks here, badass month here at Bald Move. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week with yet another badass film. It's going to be Die Hard with the Vengeance, Bruce Willis. Look forward to that. See you then. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.